Welcome. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Ross Kraus, back again for another episode of The Money Seat. I'm a certified financial planner, an MBA, and an MSA. I created The Money Seat to help educate and inspire people, especially younger people, to start investing in their future with financial planning that makes sense for them. A quick recap for those who missed the inaugural episode last week. I've designed this show to be a caller-in conversation, easygoing way to kind of go over some of your questions. No one wants to sit here and listen to me lecture for 30 minutes, I promise you that. So if you're there, you have questions, please call in at 425-373-5527. Again, that's 425-373-5527. And without further ado, let's get to our first caller, David from Seattle. Thanks for joining us, David.
Yeah, thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely, David. So how can I help you today? What's on your mind?
Yeah, So as a young person myself, I think one of the biggest concerns for me is throwing money down the drain in the form of what I call a rent.
Mm-hmm.
I think my next big financial goal would be start saving money for a down payment on a house. And I was wondering if you had any advice as to the best ways about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Can I ask you, David, if you feel free sharing this information, how old are you?
I'm 26.
26. So sounds like you've been out of college and in the workplace for about four or five years-ish?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. And you're actually asking a question that I myself and almost everyone else similar age asks. You rent right for 3-4 years, and then you're like, it feels like this money is just going to someone else's pocket, and I have nothing to show for it, right?
Well, that, and it's like you realize that your cumulative rent payment is basically just paying somebody else's mortgage.
Right.
It'd be nice if you could even subsidize your own mortgage by renting out part of your house to do the same, but build equity.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually a good point. Things have changed a little bit over time, especially now, depending on where you live, which Seattle, things are quite expensive. But with mortgage rates pretty low, you're actually right. Now is a pretty good time to look, buy a place, and build up equity. I do caution people, though, that don't look at this as an investment. While it will save you money and it's important financial plan over time, it's very important that the place you find is your place you're going to live, right? And so look at the money part of it. While it's important to be on budget, look at it, you know, secondary as well, because it's not like, and I just went through this. I moved from Chicago to here in Seattle. And when I wanted to sell my place, I didn't just, you know, snap my fingers and click a button and someone offered me what I paid, right? I mean, this is a long process. There's commissions and other costs as well in there. So I kind of encourage people to look at all aspects of this. I'm curious, though, have you started looking for places?
Not too seriously. Just kind of browsing. And I think I know there's things like throw down loans or like
buy right
down, and you can be really flexible with that these days, but it just kind of feels like you kind of figure out how to get a chunk of change in the bank before.
Yeah, and there is also a nice home buyer, first time home buyer credit as well that you may or may not qualify for based on your income. I'm curious, are you living with you? You live with a significant other, roommates, or is it just kind of you
I live with my boyfriend and roommates.
All right. And you both looking to move and buy a place together, correct?
Yeah, I guess ideally. So we like require a house. I said Seattle, but really I'm based up in Everett.
Okay.
So we live in a house, about a 4-bedroom. We need it because I'm self-employed. I require quite a bit of office space.
Okay.
And quite a bit of storage space. And so we have some unique needs. We have pets as well. So it'd be great if like we could own a place that works perfectly for us and our needs and then rent out rooms.
That's very fiscally responsible of you, David. I'm very impressed. So yeah, that sounds like you've already kind of had a good idea about this. What are you currently paying in rent, dare I ask?
So do you want like my cut of the rent?
Whatever you want sharing me. The more
sure.
The more the better.
I think our rent is like $500 or something like that for all four of us. It's split four ways and something other, which is great.
Sorry, what was that, David?
I said I think the monthly rent for all of us is like $2,200.
$2,200,
okay. Split is about like $600.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, no, it ain't bad.
Yeah.
Especially what we're getting.
Yeah, being out here in Seattle, that's pretty good. Obviously, you have some roommates, and you're splitting the cost with people. Generally, and this is a rule, it's always, you know, kind of flexible, but you don't want, and depending on how many other debts you have out there, you don't want to have more than 28% of your income or your salary, your gross salary, going towards paying for like rent, mortgage, property taxes, and, you know, all the stuff associated with a place to live. So if that kind of gives you an idea of where you could kind of look, what to look for, then that's at the high end. I say 28%. I recommend people being closer to 25 or less, to be honest. And then if you have student loans, if you have other debts, you don't want more than 36%. That's the number to be of all your debts. Of total income. So hopefully that kind of gives you a little bit more direction now of what you could search and what you should do. But to be honest, I do caution people to not go right on that line and give themselves some buffer. You know, roommates could move out, income could go down, right? Rent could go up, it's property taxes go up, right? All those things kind of happen. So give yourself a buffer in there. If that kind of helps you, give some guidance about where you should look and what your budget is.
So what would be like a good way to start, like, what's a good place to put money towards that, like building towards that down payment?
Yeah, it's a little complicated because short term, you know, I have some clients who do save just like you do, similar age as you, about 2 or 3 years. They don't want to put it on the bank and kind of let it sit there, and they want a little bit of money. But the problem is when you're trying to do this and you have a very short-term goal, which for me is like, you know, less than 5 years, you don't want it to be too much tied up in the market because it could go up or down and there's a little bit more volatility. So I generally recommend people doing something that's on the safer side. So if you're really looking for like a year or less, your best bet is probably just saving it in the bank, to be honest, because I don't think you want to take any chance that your money could go down and then you'd have to wait longer for it to come back, and right, there's just more variables, if that makes sense. Perfect.
I've heard that, you know, obviously some savings accounts like might yield more interest than others, but there's really not too many options.
Well, yes, that's a very good point. And there's people who have higher savings accounts because they have a lot more money in it. So let's just throw that aside because most of us aren't going to, you know, have access to the private stuff unless, you know, we know someone. So there's a few investments, and I'd love to talk to you a little more online, but there's a few types of things that are in the middle of like a savings account at the bank and like putting your money in the market that might in this interest rate environment earn you, you know, 1 or 2%, which doesn't sound too bad. And that's something that we have to talk off air because I can't give, you know, specific stuff. But yeah, there are ways to get 1 or 2%, let's say, and grow your money a little bit, and not just have it sitting in the bank earning nothing, but also not taking, you know, risk where you could still feel comfortable with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and like, you know, what is a good target to be shooting for that's also realistic as far as maybe getting your offer accepted?
Ooh, well, you know, the more you have and can offer a down payment, the more likely you're going to get accepted, right? So if you're shopping for people and you find yourself in a competitive situation, and this is a little bit out of my expertise, but if you're trying to find a place that's, I don't know, $500,000 and you're putting 1 or 2% down, your offer doesn't look as attractive, to be honest. So having a larger down payment saved up, people usually put in at least, I put in 20%. I recommend most of my clients put in 20% down. It obviously reduces a lot of the ongoing costs in the future. So, you know, for me, it's save as much as you can, because the more down, the better your monthly expenses are going to be, the more equity you've already started with, and the more competitive your offer is. if this is an important goal to you and your boyfriend, then I would aggressively, you know, save for this and prioritize this over other things, you know, depending on how important that is to you guys.
Suppose it is all about priority.
Yeah, I mean, with that's kind of what money is, right? I mean, if your priorities are just to kind of hang around and do nothing and, you know, not do anything fancy and not travel, then money is probably not as important to you, right? So, it's very important, and I would have a conversation with them as well. Generally, I recommend people to have a conversation to be on the same page. You don't have to go granularly, but have a conversation about, you know, what's our income, what's our budget, what do we feel like spending, and kind of how this fits in. Because if you're going to be living together, you should be making this decision together, and you should be discussing these things together. And it's okay if you have different priorities, by the way. That's normal. It's better to do that now than after you put the down payment down. Perfect. David, do you have another question, by the way? Thank you very much for that one.
Yeah, of course. The only other questions I really have is just about, like, Robin Hood and that kind of investing.
Of course. Can I ask you, have you done any of that on your own, or you've heard about it?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Okay.
Just a little bit. And I have to say, like, for someone who knows literally nothing about the stock market, mm-hmm. I find it, like, surprisingly, like some of my stocks, like, surprisingly predictable.
Yeah.
As far as, like, so let's just, I don't know, one day I was, like, on there, and I just saw everything go, you know, bonkers crazy.
Right.
Well, that's going to go bonkers crazy down tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And, like, I know, you know, they say day trading is, like, stupid, you know, or whatever. But it's, like, when you can kind of just see, it's, like, all right, well, everything's going up here. Like, I know when I open my phone tomorrow, it's going to be all red. Like, what's the move there? Is there a point in playing the game, or is it, like, just leave it in there and watch it grow?
Yeah, so the smartest people in the world, no one could predict the stock market. And once again, if I could, if any of those people could, then that would be my full-time job. It's, you know, we don't have that crystal ball. So trying to outsmart the market, trying to beat it, you're always going to be a step behind. Probably more, to be honest, more than a step. But I'm just, you know, being polite for all of us, a step behind, to be honest. And that's how it is. So, like you said, the second point was, should I just leave it there and let it ride? And the answer is, for the most part, yes. Someone asked me when the best time to buy is. I'm always going to say now, assuming you're going to hold this for, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the road. I can't tell you what the market will be in 20 years, but I would bet my life that it'll be up than it is today. Right? I don't know how much, but it'll be up. It's just how it always is. You look historically back in the last 100 years. So that's usually the best plan. People end up being their own worst enemy. They tinker a little bit. And I don't know if I've said this before, but the average stock market returns about 8%. The average individual investor like yourself will earn about 2 to 3. And the reason is, right, people do the opposite of you. They see everything green and they get excited and then they put all the money in. And then the next day it gets red and they panic, right? And then they sell it. So you actually sound like you've got some good habits already built up from doing this. And honestly, it sounds like you've actually learned a lot, which is impressive. And I'm sure you're kind of enjoying it a little bit, dare I ask?
Oh, it's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a few stocks that you've been eyeing, or some winners?
Yeah. I got my favorite stock is Celsius, the energy drink.
Okay. Interesting.
I like saw them in the store, I don't know, at the beginning of the pandemic, and I became hopelessly addicted to them. So I figured that other people would probably be hopelessly addicted to them as well. And that over time, they would continue their addiction.
Well,
and
sorry to interrupt, but it's funny you say that, because for you, it might sound crazy that this is what you're doing, but the majority of people do their investing the exact same way that you do, you know, myself including, with some stocks as well, where you know the brand, you like a product, you know they're in an industry, and you, right, that's where you put your money, with things you're comfortable with. So actually what you're doing might seem crazy to you, but it's actually very normal, and most people do that.
It doesn't seem crazy.
Okay, good.
I believe in Celsius all the way.
Good. Good. As long as you don't have the whole, you know, the whole adage, don't put your eggs in one basket, is very true. So I'm hoping you diversify that portfolio with some other stocks.
I definitely, and I pick my stocks pretty subjectively, and I pretty much go with like, all right, these are the companies that I like. These are the ones that I think are continually making good decisions, positioning themselves well in the market. So let's see what happens.
That's good. And how long have you been doing this for?
Oh, you know, I got in a little bit right after the whole GameStop fiasco, and unfortunately I missed on that joyride, but
that's okay. Yeah.
Figured it was better late than never.
Yeah. So that's good. So it sounds like you've been doing it for not a tremendous amount of time, which is true for most younger people. I would say, how has your knowledge changed between before versus now?
I'd say just like, you know, it's not just kind of coming to the realization that it's like you're only going to get lucky like that once in a century.
Yes.
And there's just a lot that gets said on the internet, and that doesn't necessarily, it doesn't really feel like there's too many garbage quick teams out there that are particularly.
It's important to not chase the next, right? I mean, we all wish we could go back in time and invest in Amazon in the 90s and Apple in the 70s and 80s, but that's not realistic. So it's important to not chase, right, what's already been done. And also, you know, if you're looking something up on the internet and it's like, this is the next hot stock, usually it's already too late, or there's a reason why.
Well, I kind of started thinking about it more as just like a savings account.
Yeah.
And like kind of putting a few dollars in there at a time. And it's like, you're right, it generally it'd be better to put it there than a bank account.
Yes.
That's not going to yield me much of anything. But besides like Robinhood, is there any other, you know, kind of ways you can save money quickly?
Save money quickly? Yes.
Or more quickly, I should say.
Yeah, so the thing that's great about Robinhood is, you're right, you can log on, you got it in your phone, you could put some money, which usually isn't a life-changing amount of money. But if you really want to build up, like, significant wealth, it's probably better to set up, like, an official savings strategy where, for me and my clients, you know, we'll set up some type of retirement account. People use their 401ks. So if you're self-employed, you would just start your own SEP IRA, a Roth IRA, depending on your income. And generally, my clients will put, you know, $300-$500 a month. Very good to do monthly contributions, because if you do once a year, it could be too much and you don't have the money in there. And then, if you do it every month, you set it up, you see it come out, and it kind of coincides with the rest of your bills. So it kind of just like helps you get in these nice patterns. And most people do it aligned with their paycheck. So I know you have your own business, so it's a little different. But there would be something called a SEP IRA. Have you heard that term by any chance before?
No, I'm pretty sure I do have an IRA.
Okay.
And I do make monthly contributions.
Perfect. Is it a regular IRA or is it a SEP IRA?
I think it's a regular.
Okay. So do you want, I'm going to give you a quick, I think it'd be important so you know the difference. So a regular IRA also works for business owners, but there's a limit. You could only put $6,000 in a year if you're over 50, and you said you're under 50. Sorry, $7,000 if you're over 50, $6,000 if you're under 50. And for a lot of people, especially if you're running your own business and somewhat profitable, that's not enough money, right? And so people open a SEP IRA where it's more of a percentage of your income, and up to a $50,000 max. So there's people who make, you know, 100, 150, 200,000 with their business, and they sock away, like I have like a psychiatrist, he's a client, and he puts around 20 to 40,000 a year in his SEP IRA. And it's a way to kind of, well, I don't have a 401k, but I want to be putting around that much in there. So people do that. And to be honest, it also saves you from paying a lot of taxes. So your income goes way less to the government. The money goes into your IRA account, and your tax bill will go way down, which I assume is attractive for most small business owners like myself, who have to deal with 1099 income and the self-employment tax and all that stuff like that, right? So yeah, so that's usually my first advice. And obviously, it depends on, once again, how much you're making in your whole situation. But I'd be happy to talk a little bit more offline about the SEP, because I think it's very powerful for people who own their own business. to just save more money and really avoid those tax bills that come right around now, by the way. Right around now, if you haven't filed your taxes yet, it's not too late. Any other questions?
No, I was going to say that's pretty much all the questions I had. I'm sad here.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us today on the Money Seat. If any of your roommates have similar questions, feel free to have them call in a future date at 425-373-5527.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, David. So David brought on some very good points today, and I'm glad that he is a small business owner because they, I wouldn't say struggle, but they have some more questions about where to save. Because for people who actually work for a big company and they have a 401k, sometimes they don't even realize that they're saving for retirement. They sign up, their money's going there. But there's a lot of people who don't have that, and they're in business for themselves, and they're like, wait, shouldn't I be like, what about my retirement, right? How should I be saving? I don't have a 401k, so what should I do? And so it's important to know that there are vehicles. The vehicle I discussed for David, the SEP IRA, generally good for solo practitioners. I have a psychiatrist, good for doctors, good for lawyers who are in business for themselves, people who maybe have a job but also have consulting income on the side can use that as well. And the good thing about that, as opposed to 401k, there's less rules. The cost and fees are much lower as opposed to 401k, which if you're a single person, you could do a 401k, but there's costs and fees associated with that. So generally a SEP IRA is nice, especially for people earning the $150,000, $200,000. You could put in what you need and really not be, besides not getting a match from your company, you won't fall behind some of your peers and some other people because you have the SEP IRA. So that was a good question. The Robin Hood question was good too. I've been getting that a lot from my younger friends recently. It's interesting too, because David's point about saving quickly, and that's such a younger generation thing. I'm trying to train them to be like, savings and investing and quick don't go together. Okay. That gambling and trading does. So it's very kind of important to try to train the mind to know that when we're doing this, it's long, it's arduous, it's slow, and it's not this get-rich-quick scheme, because that's a whole other thing. Yeah, you might have gotten lucky a few times, but over the long run, usually those end up backfiring as well. And then also with the trying to save for a house, I wish I had gotten a little more into it then, but it's actually people have that same question because they're also trying to balance things. So the real question is, I'm trying to save, and should my money go somewhere else besides, you know, being burnt in rent? But also they have student loans to pay off, and they have retirement, and they have other things they need to save. So they're like, how do I balance buying a house with these other objectives I need to do? And I think that's kind of David and a lot of other people struggle with that is, well, he said maybe I need to prioritize. And that's exactly right. You do. Because I can't tell you where to save your money first if buying a house is less important than retiring or getting out of student debt is less important. That's a personal thing to you. So once you figure that out, then you call me, and then I can help you say which goes here, and those percentages and all the numbers and stuff help. And sometimes just like calling in like David did, he might have figured out what his priorities are now after talking it out with someone or his significant other or whoever is important in his life to do that. So thanks, David. Again, those are some great questions as well. We have a little bit of time left. If anyone out there does have a question, 425-373-5527. But if not, in the meantime, thanks again for listening to The Money Seat. Next week, I'm actually going to have a little, I'm going to call it a very special episode, but it's going to be a little bit different, where I'm going to have one guest on, and he's going to be asking me about 3 or 4 questions, putting me in the hot seat. I won't know this beforehand. And just like David was, he's going to ask me one question, multiple questions. It's going to be one guest for the whole show. Generally in future episodes, we might have multiple callers who ask one question and we'll move on. But next week, is going to have my friend Jason, who's going to be on the hot seat and ask me some questions. If you have a question of your own, you can email me at ross.krause@lpl.com. and I'll be happy to dedicate a future segment to answering your questions on air. If I could get maybe two or three of those via email, I'll dedicate a whole episode to your emailed questions as well. And like I said, still working on the website and the content, but once that's up, you'll be able to go to my website at www.rosskraus.com and just submit the question there. It'll filter to me. And once again, I'd love to kind of ask as well, if you have questions about some of the guests, if there were some things I discussed that you have questions about their questions, throw them in there. I'd be happy to do that. But I'm excited to have Jason on next week. Really, I think it allows us to go deeper. And then in future, you know, once a month, a few times a month, I'm going to have these kind of special episodes where I'll feature one guest as well. I'm trying to get some of them to call in early and give you guys a preview, but we'll see. So anyways, thanks again for joining me on this week of The Money Seat, and I'll see you next week.